This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Thank you to our sponsors, the Wall Street Memes Casino, with over 5,000 custom games to choose from. Enjoy live dealers and in-play sports betting, from football to esports. Get a 200% sign-up bonus on your initial deposit up to $25,000. Use code IFLTV24. Deposit now by visiting Wall Street Memes Casino today. 18 plus only. Please gamble responsibly.
Andrew McCart, IFL TV. You already know I'm always delighted to be joined by my good friend, Mr. Dan Raphael, over there in the United States of America. Dan, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Andrew. We got another big fight card to talk about, don't we?
I love it. I love when you break these cards down, Dan, because you don't mix your words and it's always good to hear. Yeah, let's talk about it then. Terence Crawford moved up to 154 to face Israel Madrimov for the WBA and I think the WBO as well. World Super Welterweight titles. I get ahead of myself. Just talking about that fight in itself before we go and talk about the whole card.
Well, like you said, it'll be for Madrimov's WBA 154-pound title. Also, will be for the interim WBO belt, which is, I guess, available because of the fact that Sebastian Fundora is going to be on the shelf for a while because of this situation that occurred when he won that belt from Tim Zhu with the nose injury. That's going to keep him out until at least November. So, you know, they're making this so obviously the winner of that fight, Crawford or Madrimov, would end up having to fight a mandatory against Fundora, give them an option for another big time fight. But as far as that matchup goes, look, that's a good fight. I mean, Terence Crawford is looking to fight and win a title in a fourth weight class. He's been a champion in the lightweight division. He was undisputed at junior welterweight, undisputed at welterweight, still holds some of the belts in the welterweight division, but there was no big mega fight for him in that weight class. And so on to, new frontiers, I guess, right? To try to go, and as he was talking about, you know, make a little more history. Go after the possibility of becoming the first ever undisputed four-belt champion in three-weight classes. So if he wins the fight against Madrimov, or, you know, if Madrimov does it, obviously, he'll have one belt or one and a half belts, I guess, because he'll have the interim. But I suspect that Fundora may end up vacating one of the belts because of the fact that he's still obligated to a rematch against Zhu, which would not allow him to fight by the end of December, which is when the WBO made their deadline for the Fundora to fight the winner of the interim title. So, you know, that's politics, whatever. But the point here is that very well by the end of the year, Crawford could have two of the four belts on his way to potentially being undisputed in yet another weight class. But in terms of the matchup, it's a good fight. I mean, Madrimov, he may not have a huge glossy record. He's only got 10 wins, no losses and a draw. So he's very green in terms of his professional career, but he was a top-notch amateur. You know, I remember being at like either, I can't remember if it was his professional debut or his second fight. They were already matching him with legitimate guys. They knew that this kid could move fairly quickly, you know, like we've seen some of the other top amateurs that have come into boxing. They don't have to screw around with a whole bunch of four rounders and six rounders and that sort of thing. Fighters all develop at their own pace. They were okay to match him more aggressively at the beginning of his career. And he's shown that he can handle it because he's now won the WBA belt. He looked very good in knocking out Magomed Kurbanov. That was back, you know, in the, one of the recent March cards that were in Saudi Arabia. And now he gets the opportunity of a lifetime to fight the pound for pound number one. So Crawford, when I saw them faced off with each other, they're about the same size. There didn't look to be any kind of massive size difference. But one thing about Magomed, you know, you can look at the record and say he hasn't really fought a lot of top guys. You watch him fight, you know the dude can fight. You know, he's got good defense. He's got good skills. He's got good power. He's strong. He's got stamina. But Crawford's, you know, at least going into the fight, you got to look at him. He's like a Hall of Fame, you know, as they say, generational kind of talent. He's shown it in the ring.
You mentioned the size there when they did come face to face. But one thing that I noticed, because I've, like yourself, I've been in Bud's company, and I was recently in Madrimov's company there when he beat Kurbanov out in Saudi Arabia. And one thing I will say about Madrimov is he is massive when it comes to shoulders, bicep, back, legs. He is a unit. And so that will bring me on to this question then, Dan. Normally when we get these guys that are coming up through the weights, these pound-for-pound stars and stuff like that, they sometimes when they go up a weight too far, that's when they come unstuck. Is the 154-pound division Madrimov, is that sort of weight opponent that maybe we can see Terence Crawford come unstuck? Or is this, again, a comfortable division where we're going to see Crawford just run right through it?
You know, we don't know, I guess, till they fight in that weight class. I mean, but seeing what Crawford has done in his career, knowing the kind of condition he keeps himself in, it's not a guy that gets out of shape in any meaningful manner between fights. Always, you know, close to the weight, you know, seems to live the right lifestyle that's conducive to being at your best. So I don't think 154 is going to be where he finally meets his Waterloo, as they say. I think it may take the maybe moving up even heavier in weight, you know, into the middleweight division. I mean, there was some conversation perhaps at some point he might have tangled with Canelo Alvarez in the super middleweight division. But I think at 154, look, it's not in any way is it a knock on Madrimov that Crawford would probably be the favorite against anybody in the 154-pound weight class right now, whoever you would pick, Fundora, Tim Zhu, Madrimov, Charlo, you know, pick somebody, Boacek, pick a guy in that weight division, and Crawford probably would be the favorite. But it's an intriguing fight. It was an available title, and they're going to make a big show out of it. I'm excited for it.
Well, you're excited for the show. They're going to make a big show out of it. Eddie Hearn basically came out and said that this is the best card to ever land in America.
Okay.
Dan.
Come on. Why do we have to say it's that level? We can just say it's a great card, which it is a great card. But to put it at that level, you know, no disrespect to my man Eddie, but that's Eddie being the promoter. He should say that because he wants people to watch and entice people and pump them up. So with all due respect to everybody involved in what I think is a superb card, I would be less than honest if I said it's the best card in the history of American boxing. I would submit to you that people should go check out their listings on BoxRec and go take a look at some of the absolutely loaded shows that Don King put on in the 1990s. You know, I can think of one in particular in Atlantic City that I was at that had 8 world championship fights. The whole card was 8 title fights, including, I think, at least two undisputed title fights, undisputed welterweight title between Corey Spinn.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks. And Ricardo Mayorga and the undisputed middleweight title between Bernard Hopkins and William Joppy. And there was a whole slew of other outstanding fights on that card. So again, it's not a knock on this show, but that's a little bit overzealous in your estimation of the show. Go take a look at Revenge the Rematches. Go take a look at some of the other Julio Cesar Chavez headline shows that Don King put on. This is a great card, but it's not at that level.
Well, let's talk about the card then. You touched on Tim Zhu, with Sebastian Fundura having to maybe rematch Tim Zhu, but it wasn't announced on that press conference, but it's on the fight poster. Tim Zhu versus Virgil Ortiz. I'm guessing they're holding back a little bit to see what happens with Virgil Ortiz's fight this week. And I believe he's fighting Saturday night. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they have to hold back on it because you can't announce the fight when Virgil Ortiz is scheduled to fight on Saturday on the DAZN show, against Thomas Delorme. Now, he's the big favorite to win that fight, obviously. And they've been talking about this match with Golden Boy for a little while. It got done really quickly. Like, it was described to me, you know, less like probably 24 hours before we signed this as very preliminary. And then on Wednesday morning, they really got down and did it real quick from what I was told and got it squared away. But obviously it is pending Virgil's victory. But if he comes through the fight and there's no any kind of substantial injuries or anything like that, which hopefully there won't be, then we're going to see another great fight on that show because Tim Zhu wants to stay active. His cut from his from the elbow from Fundora with the terrible gash that happened in that fight, that was more superficial. Fundora's was the more serious injury. It may not have bled as much, but the nose was much more heavily damaged than the scalp. So Tim should be good to go. And clearly wasn't going to wait around until November, December to do another fight. So he'll take this fight. If he wins, you know, I guess we'll see the Fundora rematch. If he loses, I think that rematch clause goes away. But either way, Virgil Ortiz against Tim Zhu. Honestly, Andrew, if you were sitting down and you were like looking at like rankings and you took Crawford out of the mix just because he's doing what he's doing in the main event, you might say Virgil Ortiz against Tim Zhu might be the best fight you could make just in terms of excitement, action. Two guys that are going to come to fight in that weight class. That's a spectacular matchup in my mind. I mean, really outstanding. Nobody's given Tim grief because he lost a super razor close decision to Fundora in a fight that was that close and that bloody. He was so compromised. And Virgil's undefeated. He's won all of his fights by knockout. I suspect he's going to win his 21st fight by knockout against Thomas Delorme come Saturday. And that could easily be the main event. And I don't need to hype it up and be the promoter, but let's be honest, that could be the main event easily. Virgil Ortiz against Tim Zhu, no doubt about it.
And I think you'd make a good promoter, by the way.
And by the way, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you would make Tim Zhu against Virgil as the main event over Crawford. I'm saying on its own card, it could easily be the main event.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. But I'm just saying in general, the way you talk, I think you'd make a great promoter. Maybe in another life. Maybe in another life you can do it. But Isaac Cruz, man. I mean, the Pitbull. I absolutely love this fighter.
Another terrific fight.
Valenzuela, and that's an all-action fight. I think when you look at the card, it just seems to be all-action, right? Isaac Cruz, again, you know what you're getting with this guy, the Pitbull. He's named the Pitbull for a reason, Dan, and you can just tell by the way he fights. He just locks his jaw on somebody and he goes for the attack. But he's up against Jose Valenzuela, who's a good opponent in his own right. A good fighter, an all-action fighter as well. So, again, another cracking fight. You've got a Mexican versus an American, a Mexican guy, I believe. And, again, well, stereotyping, but when you do get that sort of two fighters from that Mexico bloodline, you're almost guaranteed a war, you know?
Well, you just have to watch the way these two guys have conducted themselves in their fights. You know that they're not going to have to go running around looking for each other. They're both guys that were natural lightweights that have moved up now. Obviously, Cruz moved up in his most recent fight to win the title against Romero. You got Valenzuela, who's moving up also. But, I mean, he's a tall guy. He's taller, I think, than Pitbull, even being from the smaller weight class coming up for this fight. So it doesn't seem to be any kind of, like, real big physical difference. And, you know, Valenzuela, he does have the loss to Chris Colbert, but that was very controversial, the first fight. He certainly put it away in the second fight that just took place not that long ago by scoring a one-sided dominating knockout victory. Just destroyed him in the second fight. So Valenzuela may not have the big time resume or big time record, but the dude is good. Also, for a while he was one of the top prospects out there. That was kind of unfortunate that he didn't get the decision when he deserved it in that particular fight. But it's another matchup that's good. I mean, like you said, Pitbull Cruz, especially fighting in Los Angeles where this fight's going to take place, gonna have a huge fan base. You know, a lot of the diehard fans, especially the Hispanics, who will turn out to cheer him on. I mean, they really, they very intelligently put this fight card together with not only good quality fights, but the types of matchups that you said lend themselves to excitement. You put on the right kind of, like in this particular case, an all-Mexican fight, you're going to draw in, different crowds, different fan bases to the show. And that's what you need to make a big event. You know what? Putting it in this stadium where the LA soccer club plays. That's pretty new. That's supposed to be. I mean, it had a couple of boxing events there, but nothing on this level. I think it holds about 25,000 or so for the fight. I mean, it's going to be spectacular. I'm definitely making the trip out to California for that one.
I'm gonna try and get out there, Dan, for this one.
I'll let you buy me a drink.
Oh, 100%. I'll buy you a drink. No doubt about it. I'll buy you a drink. I'll buy you dinner, in fact. How's that?
That sounds good.
Good man. Well, you know what else brings fans to the arena? It's always a good heavyweight fight. Now, you know the US boxing scene. You know Andy Ruiz. You know Jarrell Miller. You know what these two big guys bring. Probably a crossroads fight, I believe. The winner goes on to maybe where they want to be, that sort of top echelon in the heavyweight division. But again, I can see all action. I can see inside the... Put it this way. Ruiz doesn't take a backward step, and neither does Jarrell Miller. So, I mean, we're just in for an absolute great night of boxing, especially with these two heavyweights.
Well, in this particular matchup, Andy Ruiz, the big question mark about him right now is the fact that he's been off for quite a while, been quite a bit of time. He also, I think, had a little bit of a knee injury that he had some surgery on, so we'll have to see how he's feeling after that. But assuming he's okay with that and the rust is not a big factor, he should beat Jarrell Miller, who is a good engine and can throw a lot of punches, but gets hit with a lot. We saw what happened in the last fight that took place in Saudi Arabia when Daniel Dubois basically beat him down. You know, he made some excuses about that fight. He's been talking about how he's been in a lawsuit with his promoter. I mean, every boxer goes through problems going into a fight. You got to be able to put that out of your mind, not just boxers, but, you know, people who are just regular folks get up and go to work and have issues in their life that you got to overcome. So I don't really put a lot of stock in that. I think that's a lot of excuse making from Jarrell Miller. I clearly favor Andy Ruiz in a fight like this. But what makes it interesting, and they talked about this a little bit at the press conference, and this is, I think, one of the reasons why the fight made a lot of sense, is because you had Jarrell Miller, who was the one that was supposed to fight Anthony Joshua. Mm-hmm. He failed all those drug tests, got bounced out of the fight. And who was the guy that took his place? It was Andy Ruiz, who scored that monumental upset, knocked Anthony Joshua out and won those three heavyweight titles, obviously lost to him in the rematch. But now you've got these two guys, the one guy that replaced him in that big fight, fighting each other. And one thing actually that was interesting, because I've seen a lot of Jarrell Miller press conferences, he always talks a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. He was very respectful to Andy Ruiz, no shit talk at all. He even said, I'm not going to talk shit today. I think, I don't know how well they know each other, but they clearly like each other. They definitely have a lot of respect for each other. You like to see that. So, but I agree. Whatever you think about who the favorite in that fight is, that should be, as I say, like a good old-fashioned heavyweight slobber knocker.
I like that word. That might be my title there, slobber knocker. If you can let me know how you spell that, Dan. And then obviously you got the two Cubans there as well, David Morrell, who's kind of like I think he's had to move up to 175 to get these fights, because 168 was like, you know, Canelo's down there and he's got all those belts, maybe holding them to ransom a little bit because he can pick and choose who he wants to fight. But he's moved up to 175. And then you've got Andy Cruz as well, who Eddie Hearn is big on. Eddie Hearn's got high hopes for Andy.
He's not the only one.
Yeah, well, he's a promoter. That's what he does.
Well, look, David Morrell has been doing his business in super middleweight division, and he is as he has been the WBA's regular champion. He has been sitting there as the Canelo mandatory for a while. That fight has never even been ordered by the WBA. It's not an opponent that Canelo was spoken about. I don't really give him grief for that, because unfortunately, David, he's popular in Minneapolis, where he's based out of. You know, when he left Cuba, now he lives in Minneapolis. Has he become a popular fighter there? He's sold out that armory that they fight regular up there. But he just does not have the caliber of a name that Canelo is going to really look at this point, unfortunately. You know, his talent is much bigger than his name, I guess. So kind of like David Benavidez, where, you know, if you're not getting the Canelo fight at super middleweight and there's no titles available, you know, you're going to go up and fight in the heavier weight division. You know, David's a big boy also, so he's going up to 175. I suspect he will have no problem adjusting to that weight class. They put him in the ring with Hot Rod, who's a seasoned veteran, but he's not done great when he stepped up. I mean, Better BF knocks everybody out, but he really almost decapitated him in that fight, it felt like. But it's, I mean, for a first time at light heavyweight, that's a solid test. It's not like, I don't consider it like a total walkover, even if you were definitely make David Morrell the heavy favorite in that fight. But that should be action, because Hot Rod comes to fight. He doesn't run away or anything like that. So that should be exciting. That should be entertaining. And Andy Cruz, I mean, Eddie talks like, you know, he can walk on water. I'm not quite sure he walks on water, but he's really, really good. I mean, he's only, what, 3-0 right now, but he was one of the best amateurs maybe ever. You know, won everything in the amateur ranks, has like, I don't know, like I forget the number, like 4 or 5 wins over Keyshawn Davis in the amateurs, including in the gold medal match in the Tokyo Olympics. I mean, this guy is really something spectacular. And one of the things I really like and respect about Andy Cruz is when he came after a very difficult time of leaving Cuba, like so many of the Cuban fighters have when they have to defect and go through all kinds of, you know, hiding and running and trying to escape. When he finally got to the United States and he was set and he was ready to go to the professionals, a lot of the Cuban fighters, when they do that, they gravitate towards their own community. Understandable, right? You know, you want to feel comfortable in your surroundings. They'll seek out that type of trainer that sort of has that similar style that they learned in that great Cuban boxing school, which does wonders if you're trying to win Olympic medals, but is not necessarily conducive to becoming a star fighter in professional boxing, where people expect more action, not just that, you know, jab and run and that kind of defensive-oriented style that they often fight in. So what I like about Andy is that he didn't do that. He went to Philadelphia, the great fighting town. He went to the gym of Bozy Ennis, who was the father of Jerron Ennis, and put himself into that mix. And if you cannot fight offensively and like a real professional, you don't survive in the Philadelphia gyms. I don't care how good of an amateur you are. So he's really, just in the 3 fights as a professional, you can really see he's made a very, very strong adaption to the professional style. He does sit down on his punches. He does throw punches with authority. He doesn't look to run away. And the talent he has, combined with that mindset of that Philadelphia warrior gym sort of style, it's going to take him a long way as a professional fighter.
And I'm looking, because like, I'm a fan of him. I watched him throughout the amateur stuff as well, that the Olympics and the World Championships as well. I always keep a keen eye on the World Championships, especially the Olympics and the Europeans.
You know what it is, though? He's like a Lomachenko-ish. Mm. I mean, he's obviously, there has to be a belt available. He's already ranked because he's won one of the regional belts early on. There's, in my mind, there's very little doubt that he's going to get a chance to fight for a world title within, you know, 5, 6, 7 fights. You know, obviously you got to play the chessboard a little bit, but he's getting a world title fight before it's not going to be too long.
Mm. But I think it was a couple of interviews ago that we spoke, and or maybe even the last one, I can't quite remember, but I did mention to you, do you think that at some point that we'll see like an Eddie Hearn, Frank Warren 5v5 in the US, or can we see the PBC and the Top Ranks and the Golden Boys work together? And it seems like we're almost there with this card.
There's no doubt. I mean, because on this particular card, now Top Rank has done a lot of business, obviously, with the Saudis so far. Just so happens that there are Top Rank fighters in this particular card, or Frank Warren fighters for that matter. But you got Eddie Hearn, obviously, is the promoter of Majumov, and Andy Cruz. You got the PBC folks. They are obviously involved, have been with Andy Ruiz. They're involved. They've got David Morrell. I mean, they've definitely been. Isaac Cruz also. Well, Isaac Cruz, yes, with PBC, but also with Manny Pacquiao. But you've got Golden Boy with Virgil Ortiz. In other words, there's like, I mean, I'm probably missing somebody, but it's like there's, you look at the signage that they showed, or like the graphics that they put out for the fight artwork and the poster and the whole thing. You know, there's like dotted along the bottom of the thing, there's about 10 different promoters. It's sort of the same thing that happened if you take a look at some of the shows they've done in Saudi Arabia. But yes, with Turki Alsheikh, you know, running the show and convincing everybody, obviously a lot to do with the amount of money that they're willing to spend to work together, where everybody can put on a big fight, everybody can make money, the promoters, the fighters, the fans, we get the fights we'd like to see. I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
And the fact that he's done his first Riyadh season show in the States, I know he's got one planned for September at Wembley, a big one in Wembley, but the fact that he's decided, His Excellency Turki Alsheikh has come to America, and he's, within 72 hours, in Eddie Hearn's words, he's managed to get... Obviously, there must be some planning before that, but he says that within 72 hours, we've got to where we're getting Terence Crawford, we've got Andy Ruiz against Darrell Miller, we've got all these guys fighting each other, but he's got the promoters talking with each other again. And again, for as fans, as American fans, because Saudi Arabia is so far away, it's not too far from the UK, but for you, it's so, so far. So you'll be looking...
A long time.
So you're thinking... Why is all the fights over there? And it's good that he's brought them, especially the first Riyadh season fight, to LA with a stacked card.
I totally agree with you about that. And the thing about it is, you talk about like how things get done in like the 72 hours. Here's the reality about the way some of these Riyadh season and Turki Alsheikh cards have been put together. There's not months and months of planning. he basically was like, I want to do this fight, I want to do that fight. Obviously, you know, you don't get everything depending on a guy's schedule or if there's injuries and that sort of thing. Obviously, you got to take sometimes into account what's going on with the sanctioning bodies. But by and large, these fights are put together very quickly. I just told you, Virgil Ortiz and Tim Zhu, yeah, they were talking about it, but it really, once they got serious, it was like it took the morning to do. Why? Because most of the time, everybody spends a lot of negotiating time beating each other the head figuratively for every dollar and every percentage point and every little thing in the contract that there is to beat somebody up over. And then there's issues about this and there's issues about that. Okay, so Turki Alsheikh comes in and his team and his people, Dr. Rakan and the whole group over there that do these events. And I'm not saying they're pushovers or anything like that, but it's like, here's the money. And it's usually much bigger than anybody expects or can make. And nobody argues. There's not a lot of dickering around about, you know, they offer them $1 million and the other guy's like, I need $3 million. And then they get to spend like 6 weeks deciding when they finally agree to settle at $2 million. It's not like that. This is what there is. And they make those deals very quickly. Because why? Because it's great for the fighters. It's great for the promoters. It's great for the managers. Everybody gets their piece of the pie because the Saudis have essentially a limitless amount of money to spend on events that they want to spend the money on.
With the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.
So as long as they continue to do that, we're going to see people come together. There's a reason why Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn went 14 years with never speaking to each other and getting that Saudi money. And now they're putting on one of the deepest cards in the history of the sport.
I know. It's, again, I'm looking forward to this.
What's the old saying, Andrew? Money talks, baby, and the bullshit walks.
Well, I've been walking with that bullshit for a long time. I'll end it on this one because you are going out to, I believe you're going out to Vegas next week for Canelo Munguia. Great fight. I mean, like I said to you when I talked about Isaac Cruz against Valenzuela, when you get that ingredient of two Mexican warriors going at it, you can almost guarantee drama, bloodbath, knockdowns, cuts. The whole works, an absolute battle. And I think that looking at Munguia and Canelo, the way they approach the fight game, I can't see anything less. Can you?
Well, I'm not so sure about bloodbath, knockdowns, this and that. But putting that aside for the moment, because Canelo doesn't get knocked down. He's got one of the best chins in boxing. And I don't think Munguia's been down either. But anyway, I understand what your general point is, though. Yeah, that should be a high contact, very good quality, exciting fight. I know both guys in their conversations leading up to the fight are amped up about, you know, fighting that kind of fight, knowing that the Mexican fans are going to fill up the T-Mobile Arena to cheer them on. And as you said, it's just a classic kind of matchup that lends itself to good action. They've been real respectful towards each other, but I'm pretty sure that goes out the window come the night of the fight. I had the occasion a few days ago to have an interview with Canelo, and he talked about that exact sort of thing about being excited to have that kind of fight. And, you know, I know he, you know, we discussed the fact that he had said on a few different occasions that he really preferred not to fight a Mexican opponent. Mm-hmm. For, you know, that's his prerogative. He hadn't fought a Mexican opponent for quite some time. He didn't say I would close the door on it, but the way that it came together, the options that were there, the fact that it's on Cinco de Mayo, the fact that the fans were asking for this kind of fight, the fact that Munguia has been very respectful towards him, you know, that was sort of like his cue. Like, I'm going to do this. Obviously he's being highly compensated for it. That can make you do a fight with, you know, just about anybody. But yeah, I think both guys are definitely excited. And there's no, it's one thing for a Mexican to win the fight on Cinco de Mayo or even in September on the Mexican Independence Day weekend. It's a different story if you're doing it against the Mexican. There's even just a little bit more worth of the bragging rights, I think.
Yeah, I forgot about last week, last Saturday there, Garcia versus Devin Haney. I know we spoke the day before the fight, but we haven't spoke since that fight happened. And obviously, Ryan Garcia picking up that victory with the three knockdowns. Can I get your reaction to it, please, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really good fight, obviously. I mean, I don't think anybody is shocked to hear me say that. I mean, there was a lot of drama. I thought that Devin Haney did a tremendous job of boxing Ryan in the first half of the fight, even after he got badly hurt in round one. But from two through six, I thought he was in total control. Ryan wasn't throwing a lot of punches, but Devin Haney said this in so many words after the fight in his interviews, but he kind of fell asleep on the left hook, and he paid the price for it with the knockdowns. And, you know, it cost him very dearly. He was hurt. He was obviously compromised. I mean, but it was a wild kind of fight, seventh round with the point deduction and the knockdown. I know there's been a lot of conversation from some people saying that the referee should have called additional knockdowns. I don't really strongly believe that, because I haven't gone back and looked at those replays, and I'm not in the ring, but I had a hard time on the replay being able to ascertain whether it was a bona fide knockdown or it was just that you got pushed or fell, you know, from a trip or something. So I can't really fault the Harvey Dock, the referee, for that, but it was a good fight. I mean, the other thing about it I'll say is this: I maintain that all the craziness that Ryan Garcia was putting out there leading up to the fight was not trolling. That was real, because he spoke about after the fight about how much he spent his fight week, you know, drinking alcohol and going out and partying Monday night and Tuesday night. And I drank and drank and drank. Those are direct quotes from him from the post-fight news conference. So he was able to get away with it on this particular occasion. He's a young man at 25, and you know, you might be able to do that a couple of times and win, but eventually that kind of behavior will catch up to you.
Mm. Yeah, like I said, the boxing game is the best sport in the world, and it's the best game in the world. That's why every week there's always something to talk about, Dan, and that's why we love this sport, right?
Yes, sir. We got much more coming up, because the fight we're just talking about mostly today is not until August, but between now and then, you got all kinds of action coming up, whether it's like we just talked about with Canelo, Tyson Fury and Usyk for Undisputed, got the June 1st fight. We got Lomachenko back in action down in Australia. We got Jack Catterall in the rematch against Taylor. I mean, I'm forgetting some fights, obviously, but there's a whole bunch of, you know, big time fights that are on the horizon.
And listen, and you'll get an email from me at some point, no doubt.
Dad,
listen, August 3rd, if I do somehow, some way manage to wangle my way out to the States, to LA, I promise you, I will buy you dinner. We'll go out for dinner somewhere. I promise you that.
That sounds good.
On me, obviously. No problem, Dad. Again, have a good evening. Have a good, was it evening time in the States? Yeah?
About 4:30 in the afternoon.
Okay. Have a good afternoon and the rest of the day. I'll speak to you soon, Dan.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.